Welcome to Shine On, the podcast where older people share stories. My name is Judy Wild. In this podcast, we talk to creative older people in Leeds and find out about their lives. Today's episode is called Treasured Memories. Carol Gold is an oral historian. She's passionate about listening to the stories in her Jewish community in Leeds and shares them in books and podcasts. As Carol says, she's a people person. I met Carol to find out more about the Jewish Stories Project, why it's important to her, and how we can learn from people's treasured memories.
In the year 2010, Leeds Jewish community was celebrating 150 years of the establishment of a community, most of it based around Sheepscar, the lower end of the city. And to celebrate this 150 years, it was decided within the community that they would present a small exhibition at the museum in Leeds and asked people to contribute any items of interest or stories. And they made a whole day presentation, and it was very well supported, not just by the Jewish community, but by the community of Leeds itself. There was a lot of interest shown. There was so much excitement within ourselves, the community, the Jewish people, that it was decided that this could be extended into a storybook of the community. And I was asked by the committee that was formed, would I do some interviewing with people, along with other members of the group, and interview people in the community just to tell a little bit about their life stories. This happened, the stories were all recorded, and then two of the ladies of the committee put it all together into a book, which was called From the Leylands to Leeds 17. And instead of just being an anthology of the history of the community, it was more of a living story. And there were extracts taken from all the recordings that we'd done, but maybe only just a line. It then started the thought of making this more into an oral history and a bigger event. And from about 6-8 months ago, this has now stepped up and there are a lot more stories being recorded. And the whole recording is going onto a living archive so that there are these memories of the older people and maybe slightly younger people who've done different sorts of jobs and lives. And this is how this is extended into what is going to be a 3-year project.
To take you back a step then, when you were collating all this information, you put it into a book. I believe that was distributed on a worldwide basis?
It was. There was so much interest in it that I was also involved with actually posting the book out to people who weren't local. And we sent it to people in Australia, in Israel, obviously, because of the link with families still here in Leeds and in England. And Canada, Italy, all people who had an interest and a connection were asking for this book. It was available. You could get it, information online as how to get a copy of the book. And it was very interesting. A lot went to America, of course, and it's literally been worldwide.
And this then led to a series of podcasts with some of the people that had contributed to the book?
Yes. From it, two people who were writers, Anthony Clavain, who was from Leeds originally, and another guy, Mike Levy, actually wrote a play, which was recently performed. They put together the stories of the people who were specifically living around the Chapeltown area, the stories of the youth, where they would go for entertainment, where they would meet, their lives, where they studied, what jobs they did. And this was written into a play, and it was called Meet Me at Cantor's, which was a fish and chip shop on the main Chapeltown Road where people would gather, get their fish and chips and talk and go off. And it was like a central hub going back to the 1940s, 1950s. And this was how it all spread. The word got out. And then the podcast now starting that we're creating now will be going on. And it's from people of all walks of life.
What's the most unusual person that you've interviewed?
Goodness gracious me. Yeah. I interviewed fairly recently a man who belonged to one of the first Jewish Scouting Association, PACs, in the centre of Leeds. And he went along as a young man, joined first of all the Cubs, then the Scouts, then became involved with being a leader. But when he was a Scout, there is what they used to call the jamborees, and I think they probably still do them. The Scouting Association, it's a worldwide gathering of Scouts and affiliated departments of that, who get together in countries. And he was chosen to be the representative in Canada for the Jamboree, and he represented the Jewish community of Leeds. And his story of how they're even getting there in the 1950s, you didn't have jet aircraft going, and the length of his journey, the interesting things that he did, how they worked and looked after everybody within this huge gathering of Scouts. It was a very impressive story. And then when he came back from it, there were presentations made to him and the photographs. And to go with the podcast, we're also collating photographs and documents of people's stories.
Fantastic. So going on from this then, you're putting together an archive of all these different stories. How would I actually get hold of those stories should I want to listen to them?
They will be, everything will be online. And we plan to do it so that it's part of it is going to be held by Leeds City Council. They do have their own archive of the Jewish community. And it's really due to them that they said they would like more information, a bigger archive. So it will be available. People will be able to find out about it. There will be newspapers, articles, all sorts of things will be made available. And so that people will be able to link into it easily. We are planning to have like a hub in one of the Jewish community centres. We're going to have like a listening centre where people put headphones on, have a list of what's available around to listen, pick out a name, have a cup of coffee and sit and listen. And it's like a listening post. That's what is one of the aspects of what we're doing. And that hopefully will spread.
I believe you were inspired in part to do this because you wanted to leave a legacy to your own children of where they came from and their family history. Is that right?
This is true. This is very true, because everybody has a story. Everybody in the community, whether it's what they've done since they've been in Leeds or whether it's their family history. So many key people have come to Leeds virtually as refugees in the late 1800s, and they have come from all over Europe. And there are still stories that people have got, and photographs and memories of life either of their great-grandparents. On these things, these stories connect a community, and it keeps the children. You think about your own children. When they're 6 and 7, they're not really interested in what grandma used to do, or grandma didn't have a car at the time. But as they grow older, they connect more. And I found sometimes that a lot of people are saying, I wish I'd asked my grandfather this. I wish I'd asked my mother about how she lived or where they lived. And once we've got these collated, these stories, they are fascinating. And what may some people, when I start to interview them, will say, oh, my life's not really interesting. But you'd be amazed what comes out when you just listen to them and say, just go back and tell me a little bit. Why did you go to so and such a place or do so and so? And out comes a completely side story that's fascinating.
Why is it, do you think it's important, particularly to Leeds, to capture this information for future generations?
The Jewish community in Leeds owes a great debt to the community going back 150 years. It was very difficult. These people who came over from Eastern Europe. Most of them were from Eastern Europe, Poland, Lithuania, Russia, and then a bit more into the Western European. There were big communities in Hungary that came over, all places. These people were the refugees, and they were escaping anti-Semitism in a big way. In Poland particularly, in Russia particularly, there were what they were known as the pogroms, where for no reason at all, the communities were being attacked. And they escaped. They needed to save their own lives. As we know, refugees up to today's standards are still in that same situation. And a lot of people came, most people escaped, well, they had to escape by boat. And they came from mostly the local ports on Eastern Europe and Gdansk particularly. Boatloads of people were brought over. They didn't know where they were going. And they needed to work. So what happened? The boats would come into Hull. They would come through the borders into England. Some people were told, oh, this is America, because they'd been told America was the land of opportunity. And just to get them off the boats and say, oh, yeah, this is America. And they didn't know. But people came over and then needed to work. And the word got out that if you came to a bigger place than Hull, like Leeds, it was already an established city and it had the work ethos of the mills. This would be a safe haven. And people did come over, but they looked after themselves. They would be met as they came in off the trains from Hull to Leeds and taken to where in the... mostly around, as I said, in Sheepscar. They had no money. They came with what they had, a few possessions.
So it was a Jewish community was supporting people as they were coming into their community.
Exactly that. They would bring them in and take them into the housing people. They were in poverty-stricken houses, but they had safety. And that was the important thing. So they started... people started small businesses in the tailoring trade. And the reason mostly for that was because it was what they did when they were back in Eastern Europe.
And is this what happened to your family? Because I believe you were originally from Russia.
Yes, exactly what happened. On my father's side, they were from Poland. And his mother came over as a young woman with her sister, and found the elder brother had already come and suggested that they come over. And this has a very personal note to me, because this family established themselves in Leeds. My grandmother met her husband here in Leeds and they got married in Leeds. They then decided to move across to Liverpool, but that's a different story. But the people of Leeds created their own community, their own little synagogues, of which there were many at the time, all around the Sheepscar area. And they started to improve their lifestyles. They started to earn money. And as a side branch of that, the community started to pay back Leeds for the reception that they had had. And this is where a lot of people became benefactors to the city. Some families made a lot of money. And then we all know the name Montague Burton.
Yeah.
He was one of the people who established a factory and employed hundreds of people, not just the Jewish people, but the community of Leeds. And they had a reputation of wanting to build the city and to help the city that has helped them.
It's such a positive message, isn't it? You know, if that could be the blueprint for every immigrant community that came in. And I think by what you're doing, it's spreading that message of hope, yes, for future generations to tap into. It's a very worthy thing that you're doing.
It's a very interesting community, because they were interested in work. They were interested. They had to do it if they were going to survive.
Do you see parallels between that and the Asian community in terms of, I don't know,
your feeling on it, but, you know, there's often comparisons between Asian mothers and Jewish mothers in the media and a reliance on education to pull themselves up and move forward.
Very much so. The Asian community, as I've watched this Asian community, they were also very linked together in their own little area and living together. And gradually you can see them expanding and integrating, but with the same ethos of keeping their community strong. They have their own places of worship. They have their own schools, but the schools are more open. There's specifically a Jewish school, primary school in Leeds, and now a high school. But that is partially run by Leeds City Council as well. And there are Asian children in there as well. It's not solely just for the Jewish people. And it's this opening of the communities. But the work ethos is very, very similar. And the sharing of their knowledge and wanting children to do well and achieve.
And do you personally enjoy what you're doing in terms of meeting people and having the opportunity to record their stories?
Very much so. Strangely enough, I'm not actually from Leeds.
Where are you from?
I'm from Liverpool. That's where my grandparents moved to and where my father met my mother. And they married and they lived in Liverpool. Len lived in Southport, which was not very far away, where I was brought up and educated. But I've always been a people person. I've always been interested in how I was related to other people. And every time I was socialising, my mother would say, oh, come and meet this new cousin, because a lot of people had a lot of links. And so I was always very interested in social history. And now, being involved in this project, it was an opportunity I felt for me. I was very pleased to have been asked, would I? Because I got quite well known in the community from working with other groups, whether they were charity groups or children, doing drama with children, working. I became a cub leader for a while. And I put myself into the community because I was enthusiastic to meet people and talk to them and find out who they were and why and how. So this is really now what I'm doing now is an extension of that curiosity of my own to get people to relate their stories. And it's very interesting to see where people have come from. Because I usually start back at the beginning and how they've got to do, what work they do, what interests they do, what entertainment they have, what their grandchildren are now doing, how they've taught their grandchildren, a little bit about the history and seeing where it all goes. It all links together like doing a great big jigsaw puzzle.
And have you discovered things about your family in your day-to-day activities that you feel has shaped you as an individual?
Yes. Yes, very much so. My mother was very talkative. She would be, even till the day she passed away in 1997, if there was anyone to talk to, she would involve them in a conversation, whether she was on a train, on a bus. And she taught me how to approach people. And my father as well. He was very much involved with involving people by starting a debating society in the community in Southport and introducing interesting talks to the community. And it taught me a lot to how to approach people, how to talk to people.
And you use those skills in your professional life, I believe?
Yes. I've always been interested, again, with the jobs that I've had. And the last major job, my last 26 years of full-time employment, was with a solicitor. And our speciality was conveyancing. A moving house is probably the second most how should I describe it? You're turning your life upside down, moving house. It's stressful. And my boss realised that I was able to talk to people and talk them through the processes where he was too busy, needed to work on the technical side of doing the conveyancing. I took over quite a lot of the introducing the people and advising them as they literally would walk through the door. Can I have a quote for conveyance, please? Or on the phone. And I, having the skill to be able to put people at ease and do it from a layman's point of view, not from the technical point of view. The boss did all the technical side and I would do the getting them through and how to prepare documentation that they needed to produce or look at certain instances and connect between the estate agents and ourselves. And I found that was the best part of the job.
I can appreciate that, the way you're coming across. It's obvious that you love talking to people. If there's anybody listening to this and they feel that they'd like to make a contribution to your archives, how would they get in touch with you?
We are planning a few events within the community, but they will be put around in the local area, libraries and things like that. And we also plan to put stuff out in general places so that people will be able to come along. And if they have got an interesting story, it was quite interesting when we were actually selling the book when it came out, because people would come to my house to collect them. And it was pretty obvious that they weren't Jewish people. And I asked the question, why particular, you know, do you have a link? Is there a connection? Oh, yes. Well, actually, my grandma was Jewish, but she married a non-Jewish man. So we sort of lost the links. But I remember some of the stories and I'd like to read more about it, which is why they bought the book. And it was obvious that there were many links that we hadn't seen coming. And it's only by having produced the book that, so while we're going to be doing this, we will also be trying to put adverts around and in libraries and local cafes and things, that this project is still up and running and that people will be able to get information and there will be contact numbers for them to get in touch with us as a group and offer their stories.
Well, sort of take it back a step, and you've done some wonderful things. As an older person in particular, what actually gave you those skills? What in your upbringing gave you the confidence to become the woman that you are now and by being such an effective communicator?
Wow. Let's go back to being about age 10. And I had gone to ballet school. My mother encouraged me to go to ballet school, but it was pretty obvious I was not going to be a Dame Margot Fontaine. So the school, even the school said, I think you're wasting your money. So my mother took me away from there. And about a year later, when I was about 10, she said, would you like to go to an elocution, as it used to be known? They were how to speak properly. Mm-hmm. I was getting a bit of a flat Lancashire accent and didn't suit my mother. And not that she was very posh. But so I said, oh, yes, that would be nice. And I was enrolled at what was known as the Northern School of Speech and Drama in Southport. Went to weekly lessons in this very old Victorian building. And the teacher was known as, she was Christabel Burniston, which meant absolutely nothing to me, except it sounded a nice name. But this lady, as group teaching, not only did we have to learn my pa's car is a Jaguar, we had to also do free speech. You would be given a subject to talk about for 5 minutes about something you probably didn't even know about, but would have to talk freely. And it even got through to doing it at exam level when we did our exams. And it was like public speaking. And from that, it was something I found that I could do. And I was at this school, it was probably quite expensive for my parents, for about 2 years before I left. But I had this ability now to actually speak. And I sort of quite enjoyed it, being comfortable to be able to speak. And I went on through my education, through high school, and I went to college, and I went to catering college. And part of that, we used to have visiting chefs would come and give a talk to some of the students in the college. And at the end of it, I was already known for being sort of quite verbal. And the teacher would say, the lecturer would say, "Oh, I now call upon Carol to give the vote of thanks." And I go, "Thank you for that." And then I'd have to stand up and speak. And I was able to do it. I'd also been involved with the debating society at school and found that I was quite free to speak, whether I, what I said was correct, but I used to persuade people to go with my side of the story. So I started to get used to it, and it didn't upset me. It didn't floor me to be able to just speak off the cuff. And that was something that I then, I was also, by the time I was 15, joining drama groups and taking part in productions, whether I was acting or doing backstage. And that love of the stage and theatre stayed with me. Mm. And when I eventually came to Leeds in 1971, met a whole new community and blended with them, I started to join committees so I would meet more people. And I got involved and was not afraid to speak up about something or put my hand up and say, "Oh, well, I'll do that bit of whatever it, the job was, whether it was fundraising or organising a jumble sale." Or, and then I, as I said, became a cub leader and was happy to talk to children. And it sort of spread from there that I was asked, with my knowledge of drama and joining a big drama group that established itself in 1976, that I became more involved with the community and more involved with helping the community with doing drama productions for children, which were very popular. And it did, in fact, raise a lot of money for me having said, "Oh, yes, I'll do that." And then again with musical reviews for older people, my contemporaries, and organising events that depended on me being able to talk to people.
So you developed the skills over a long period of time to talk to just about anybody, from what you've said,
yes,
from older people to children.
Yes, yes. In fact, I had a job as a secretary at the Yorkshire Bank, and it happened to be in the same department as their publicity. And people knew me. And when Yorkshire Bank was opening new branches or opening one that's been renovated, they would bring some high-up person, like the Lord Mayor would come and do the opening, or the High Sheriff or anybody like that. And they asked me to go along to talk to these people, put them at ease, make sure they had coffee, introduce them to other people and just chat to them on a level. And it didn't matter to me who they were. They were just people to talk to.
And you've met some quite famous people, I believe, through these avenues.
Yeah. In one of, oh yes, my most famous claim to fame was interviewing for, as a guest speaker, Kay Mellor. She had offered to come to our group and talk about her life, but she wanted to do it interview style. And she said she would bring her lady that she'd chosen, who was a friend of hers, who happened to be a journalist as well, and she would do the interview. And on the day, the morning, I got a telephone call at work from her PA to say, "She's awfully sorry, Kay, but she's just found out that her lady friend who's going to do the interviewing is ill and she can't do this talk this evening and we'll have to cancel it." And I gulped and said, "I've sold 100 tickets. I can't really cancel it." And just straight off my head, I said, "Could you ask Kay if she'd mind if I did it for her?" took over this other role of this lady and do ask the questions. And back came the phone call a few minutes later. Yes, she did it. And I breathed a huge sigh of relief and thought, what have you just done, Carol? And then got on with the rest of the day, went to pick up Kay Mellor, had a chat with her in the car about just a few questions I might ask, and off we went. And we had a most wonderful time talking to Kay Mellor, and people kept coming up to me afterwards saying, oh, it's like talking to Michael Parkinson. I said, I don't think so. No, but it meant that we saved the day. We didn't have to lose all our ticket money that we'd taken. And we had a fabulous evening because once she got going, she didn't really need me.
If you enjoyed this, there are more Shine On podcasts to listen to. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more extraordinary stories on our website, articles, interviews and features by and about fascinating older people in Leeds and Yorkshire. Go to www.theshinemag.com. If you have an idea for a podcast or would like to join the storytelling team, contact us at podcasts@theshinemag.com. Shine On is brought to you by the makers of Shine Magazine, with support from Chapel FM. Season 1 is funded by Leeds Inspired.